Randy's got insomnia.
Why are you so afraid to go to sleep?
Whenever I close my eyes, he's there.
And a television therapist tries to drag Freddy into prime time.
Bad idea, bud.
Will the shrink's method succeed?
Leave the kid alone. He's mine.
Or will the Kruger treatment prevail?
Is there a doctor in the house?
Find out on the next Freddy's Nightmares.
Well, we are headed right back to Springwood, my friends. This is Welcome to Prime Time, a Freddy's Nightmares podcast. I am your host, Enrique Couto, here with Double D, Louis DeNoyer.
Hello.
It's never ending.
No, it's not.
It isn't. No, it's...
We're into the second season now, and it's still going.
Well, it's the second season of this show. We only have one season of this show.
Well, that's true, too.
Every season is a dreary fall with you, David. I mean, Louis. I mean David.
Oh,
and
okay.
I mean Louis.
And Louis together.
Yes, yes. So
together again.
So tonight... We are talking about season 2, episode 1 of Freddy's Nightmares.
Yes.
Dream Come True.
And did it come true for you, though?
Well, no. Right now, I am not feeling like my dream is coming true, and I'll tell you why.
Why is that?
Because Tubi might be taking the series down.
Yes.
And that is not okay.
That is unfortunate news. Yeah, at the time you're hearing this, it is possible that it's already gone, unfortunately. We were alerted by a friend last week that there was an expiration date appearing on the Freddy's Nightmares page on Tubi. So, unfortunately, if you're hearing this, there's a chance that it is possibly not able to watch at this point.
That was an interesting way to put it.
I mean, I don't know. I hope somebody else picks it up, but at this point we are unsure, but we will let you know once we find out, of course.
Well, if it goes off of Tubi and doesn't go anywhere else,
yeah,
which I can't, I mean, I guess it could end up on a Hulu or a Prime.
Yeah.
But I really doubt it.
I mean, would it go back to Screambox at this point? It's my question too.
I have no idea.
Yeah.
It's a Warner Brothers property, so
yeah.
It could end up on HBO Max, but I really doubt it.
I doubt that, but that would be cool.
It would be nice.
It'd be very nice.
Wouldn't it be nice? It would be super, super nice. It's never going to happen.
It's never going
so
to happen.
So there will be no joy in this dojo. But we are here, and for those who are on our Patreon, you're watching us in video, and you can see, look at how Dave shifts. The moment we start recording, he's like not centered anymore.
Just looking.
Yeah. It's one of the biggest joys of working with Dave is that the microphone, he like will start talking below the microphone or above it. It'll be like, hey, let's do an audio check. And you'll be like, check. This is the Freddy's Nightmares podcast.
I actually read it correctly.
And then when I hit record, you're like, hey, it's a Freddy's Nightmares podcast. I don't know.
Sorry, listeners. We're in quite spirits today right now as it stands.
Are we?
Oh, we
is
are.
That is that what you're going to go with?
I think that's what I'm going to defend.
Is this where you want to be when Jesus comes back? So, anyway, but we do want to warn you that by the time this airs, Tubi, they're saying that they're going to take it down on the 30th.
Yeah.
But I will tell you, I have a little inside knowledge about Tubi because I work with them a bit.
Yeah.
Sometimes they just say that.
Okay.
To get people to watch
them.
But this kind of feels like they're telling the truth.
Yeah,
so
I can see that.
If that does happen, we will have to resort to, well, we have a
copy.
We have a bootleg.
Yes, we do.
That was provided by a very kind fan.
Yes, indeed.
And we generally don't want to resort to that kind of thing.
No, we do not.
But we will if there's literally no other way.
No other option, yeah. And I mean, and of course, this happens right as we start season 2. So we got 22 episodes of the show under our belt. And then they're like, oh, you want to watch the second season? Ah, too bad.
Sorry, homie. Well, and as we're starting season 2, I guess this was only on Tubi for like 1 year.
1 year, yeah. I mean, it had to have been, if a year, because it feels like it wasn't that long ago that it got added. But I mean, you know how my general concept of time is.
I know your general concept of anything is.
Fair enough.
Poor. So, but anyway, so yeah, but if you want to watch the video podcast and feel confident that you're supporting the program directly, go to freddysnightmares.com, click on Patreon. The $3 tier or higher gets you video podcasts and movie watching streams, yes, which don't involve Dave. So that's like a double value.
I heard you were doing that from you.
Yeah. Yeah. So, but I guess there's not much more to get into there, but we did want to mention that because prior to this, we always told you, check it out on Tubi.
Yep.
And we always put the link. I always did, as if Dave does anything here. I always put, you know, that link in there. Well, you know, it's a bummer.
It really is.
Tubi is a service people are excited about right now. And it was really great to have it on there.
It was, well, access was everywhere for it. It was easy for me to.
Everywhere in the United States.
In the United States, yeah.
We have Canadian friends who were very annoyed.
Yeah, easy for me to pull it up, easy for you to pull it up. And I mean, now that we have our set, we're at least covered on that. But yeah, I do feel bad if people aren't going to have access to it. But hey, we're going to give you full recap still.
It's true. You don't even really need to watch the show.
It just adds that extra oomph.
No.
Are you ready?
No.
Well, too bad. You're ready for Freddy because we are going to dive into season 2, episode 1, bitch, Dream bitch, Come bitch. True with that bitch button.
Bitch.
Original air date is October 8th or 9th of 1989. This episode is directed by George Katzenger. He is the man who brought us The Bride Wore Red and Black Tickets from season 1.
Okay.
Written by Tom Blomquist. He was the writer and producer on episodes of The A-Team, Swamp Thing, Walker, Texas Ranger, and the story is by Tom Lazarus. He did the teleplay for Mazes and Monsters in 1982, the Tom Hanks Dungeons and Dragons movie.
What?
Yeah.
I've never heard of such a thing.
Oh, you've never heard about
it?
Oh my God.
No.
It's not good, but it's entertaining.
How could it possibly be good? just from the descriptors you gave.
Yeah.
Did you say it was made for TV as well?
Made for TV, yeah.
Yeah, that, like...
It's one of those movies that ends up on, like, all of those, like, Mill Creek and, I can't think of the other company.
Echo Bridge.
Yeah,
Echo
collections.
Bridge.
So.
Well, so continue, David.
Tom Lazarus was also the writer. I had to bring this up on Stigmata.
Oh
yeah,
you're a fan of Stigmata, aren't you?
I like it. It's not
you don't
one
mind
of my
all
favorites.
The bleeding in your arms.
I don't
and hands.
Mind all the bleeding. In
no,
my
but
arms.
No, but you like the Patricia Arquette
yeah,
movie.
It's
Stigmata.
Not a bad one. It's not one of my favorites, but it's I have a huge love for Gabriel Byrne. Like that movie I showed you, Shade, that he's in that poker movie with Stallone.
No, oh, you're thinking of Jade. No, I'm just kidding.
Jade has David Caruso, and I love Jade.
David Caruso and Jade, baby.
Jade's so good. Okay. So, Dream Come True. We open on a nice shot of Springwood. As a car drives down the street, we are shown the exterior of a nice home, Springwood College, a clock tower, and eventually another street as we suddenly hear the sound of a locomotive chugging along when suddenly we cut to a familiar face of Freddy who shouts, gotcha!
Well, he jumps, like, it just cuts to a shot of him and he jumps and goes, gotcha, which actually made me jump.
Did it get you?
It was a little bit surprising. It was like that German car commercial thing that was passed around the internet. But Dave, we're starting up with season 2 of Freddy's Nightmares and you've already fucked up.
How'd I fuck up?
You fucked up hugely.
The new intro?
Yes!
Yeah, we're...
How could you not even mention
I had it
the
on my
new
brain,
intro?
But I didn't even think about
so,
it.
So, the show's intro is now Freddy'd up. And a lot louder, a lot more in your face.
Well,
and they have Freddy pop up, and he says something like, "You're welcome.
You're in Springwood now."
Yeah, you want him to say "bitch," but he doesn't because it's broadcast.
Boy, yeah,
boy,
you're in Springwood now, boy.
Oh,
I don't know.
Why do you want Freddy around boys so much?
I don't want him around them. He just ends up around them for that matter.
But
and
no, how. So I will say I really like where they went with this new Freddy intro.
Yeah.
I think it's really cool. They're like superimposing him over some of the screaming heads and stuff.
My gosh.
It was silly, but it also gave it like a little refresh.
Yeah.
And it made me go, hey, this is going to be different.
It was really fun to have that new intro and just kind of get back to basics. Cause like we talked about, we've been off with the bonus episodes for almost 4 weeks now.
Yeah.
So.
Whose fault is that?
Mine.
Oh.
Yeah.
Correct.
Yeah. That's me.
So, but no, that jump scare, I mean, it straight up just cuts to a shot of Freddy.
Gotcha.
And it got me.
Yeah.
So.
Got me too.
Oh, it did?
It did.
Fucking loser.
The first time it did. No, the first time
fucking
it did.
Loser.
So we then
bitch.
Immediately cut to a young man who clearly awakens from a nightmare and sits up in his bed, sweating and terrified. We meet Randy Jennings, played by David Kaufman. He was in a Down to Earth TV show in 87.
Wait, his character's name is
Randy Jennings?
Jennings. We have a friend named Randy Jennings. Yes, we do.
I was wondering if you were going to catch on that or if I was going to bring it up
on the show, but yeah. No, we have a buddy named Randy Jennings.
Yeah, Randy Jennings.
That is exactly his name.
Yes, it is. So it's David Kaufman. He played in a show called Down to Earth in 87, did 106 episodes of that show, Back to the Future series. He's mostly known for voice work because he's the voice of Stuart Little on the film and the cartoons. He also is the voice of Danny Phantom, the Nickelodeon show.
Oh, Danny Phantom.
Yeah.
That was so a little David bit Kaufman. Before my time, but yeah, a lot of people like Danny Phantom.
So we meet Randy Jennings. He takes a deep breath, calming himself down before we cut to a TV studio. We hear a woman begin a countdown and see a studio audience begin to applaud as the show starts up. We then meet Stan Brooks, who is played by Jay Thomas. He played a cop in Chud in 84, The Park Is Mine, a great Tommy Lee Jones thriller in 85. He was on Cheers, Mr. Holland's Opus, and he was actually Mr. Griffin in the film Killing Mr. Griffin, which I'm sure you're probably familiar with because that played Lifetime a lot.
No, I don't know that one. I know Jay Thomas for his radio work.
His radio work, yeah.
I used to listen to his radio show on Sirius XM. Yeah.
He was also, I found out, the Easter Bunny in Santa Claus 2 and 3, and he was on Ray Donovan, which I forgot about him being on
Ray Donovan. Yeah, he was on Ray Donovan. Yeah, I remember that.
So he sadly passed in throat cancer in 2017, but he is Stan Brooks in this episode, and he is hosting a Springwood talk show with a topic about dreams, and he introduces Dr. Brandon Keffler, played by Scott Marlowe. This man's career started in 51, 109 acting credits. Alfred Hitchcock Presents in 61. He was on episodes of Mission Impossible.
That is so cool that they have a guy who was on Alfred Hitchcock Presents on arguably the closest thing to it.
And he was also on Days of Our Lives in 84, Star Trek Next Generation. He's on the show to promote his new book called Dream Come True. Stan Brooks calls the book overpriced and begins to open questions for the audience. He calls on a woman who stands up and identifies herself as Kathy Jennings, played by Linda Miller. She was in Alice, Sweet Alice in 76.
Wow, a classic, yeah. If ever there was one.
Night of the Juggler in 1980.
Night of the Jugs?
Juggler, not Jugs.
Why is it always Juggler and not Jugs with you?
I don't know. Elvis and Me in 88, and was also in 17 again in 2009. She is stating that she's a single parent and came here about her son who's having nightmares, but he will not talk to her about them, commenting that he's becoming more and more terrified to a point he's not sleeping at all.
Oh, dear.
Dr. Keffler responds.
Something you never hear about in Springwood.
No, not at all. Dr. Keffler responds that he sounds like a perfect candidate for dream come true therapy, stating he has a whole chapter in his book about subconscious anxiety manifestation in teenagers.
Oh, yeah. I think I read that on the can.
On the can. Kathy tells him she doesn't want answers from a book. She needs help, so she hoped coming to the show would convince the doctor to come see her son. Keffler apologizes, stating that that's not something he does, which causes Stan Brooks to fire up, asking him, well, why not? Questioning the validity of the therapy without proof, adding, any Tom, Dick, or Harry can write a book. He continues to badger Keffler, even getting the crowd involved in agreeing he needs to show some proof that his therapy works if he has any hope to sell his book, which he gave that dude a what for. It was kind of great.
He was kind of like Morton Downey Jr. if you put him on like a lot of Xanax.
Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah.
So Keffler reluctantly agrees to do a house call to the Jennings home, and we see Kathy's son. Home to see Kathy's son, and Stan pipes up that the camera crew is going to follow the doctor around at the Jennings residence and show proof of his therapy working before they cut to a commercial break. Wow. Suddenly, Freddie pulls up the TV screen, down, stating, we interrupt this broadcast for a special message. The opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of yours truly. Oh, no, no, no. I mean, who needs to read a book about dreams when you can experience a nightmare in full living color?
And he has a point.
Yes, he does.
Also, I appreciate that he name dropped in living color. I love the way Jim Carrey
you
plays
can
that
do
burn
what
victim.
You want.
That's
do
good stuff. Yeah.
In living color.
Freddy.
I mean, he could have easily done Fire Marshal Bill with that face.
What do you mean about his face?
Oh, you know what I mean.
Oh, wow. Ableist Dave over here. Ableist Dave.
So we cut back to an interior of a room where we see a TV with static running on it, and then we see Randy asleep in his bed. Suddenly the static stops and we hear Freddy's voice state, and now here's Freddy. The static cuts back on the TV as Randy wakes up to the noise and looks around his room. Sitting up on the bed, his calm demeanor is quickly shattered as Freddy's glove shoots through the top of the bed mere inches away from Randy's body before he jumps off the
whoa,
bed.
Whoa, 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 whoa.
What?
Mere inches from his body. I'm pretty sure Freddy was trying to grab his cock and balls.
I mean, that's what it did look like, yes.
I'm just saying, I'm pretty sure. Also, I did want to mention, isn't it incredible that it took all this time for a dream expert to wind up in Springwood?
I will say, yeah, that you know, 22 episodes, 23, we finally get the expert. So, you know,
yeah.
They made good time.
Yeah.
Didn't miss out on a lot of kid deaths, but they'll make up for that, I guess.
Yeah.
So we, Randy jumps off the bed. He runs around the room, which is lit garishly red and green, trying to get out. He comes to his bedroom door, banging on it and trying to get out, and looks back at the bed. Downstairs, Dr. Keffler and Kathy arrive at the Jennings residence as Kathy explains that Randy was a perfectly normal kid even after his father died. But it wasn't until they moved to Springwood that he started exhibiting strange behaviors. Go
Unusual.
Figure.
Unusual.
Yeah, very. So we, Dr. Keffler tells Kathy to call him Brandon, but the silence is then cut by Randy's scream as he suddenly plummets down the steps of the home, hitting the floor right in front of the doctor and his mother.
Classic Randy.
I love it because he's like, just thud, 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 thud.
Yeah, no. Oh, boy. I mean, but the kid knows how to make an entrance.
That he does, indeed. So Kathy and Dr. Keffler rush over, asking if he's okay. Randy sarcastically replies, he's great, never felt better. His mom asks him what happened, to which Randy sarcastically replies again with, what do you think happened? His mom confirms another nightmare as Randy goes to walk away, asking, gee, how did you guess that? He's kind of a little shit in this first part.
A little bit of a shit, yes.
Kathy tries to introduce Dr. Keffler, but Randy already knows as he was watching them on the TV, commenting, great, mom, now the whole town knows I'm a basket case, which, yeah, they do.
I mean, you leave Belial out of this.
Keffler asks Randy if that's how he sees himself. Randy replies with, that's how it is. Dr. Keffler offers to help Randy, but he doesn't take him seriously. Kathy encourages her son to let him try to help him, and Randy agrees, stating he's got nothing to lose.
Except his life.
His life,
but,
indeed.
I like how this doctor, even by Springwood standards, he's pretty dismissive initially.
Yeah.
And that's saying something, because the adults of Springwood, I feel like a 16-year-old kid could be literally engulfed in flames and be like, Mom, Dad, call a fire truck. And they'd be like, I think you just need a good night's sleep.
When we get to the B story, there's a portion of that I'm going to talk about in regards to the connection of crimes over that period, and then being like, I think we figured it out.
I think we got to the bottom of it. Everybody needs a good night's sleep.
But we'll get there.
But also... No, please continue. Yeah,
so
yeah.
Later that night, Randy sits on the couch as Keffler looks over him with Brooks's camera crew shooting the interaction. Keffler tells Randy once they're in session, he won't even notice the cameras, and he begins to question Randy about the last time he had a good night's sleep. What were we just saying?
I mean, this is clearly a case of you need some sleep, boy.
So Randy tells him a couple weeks, which causes Keffler to ask, why is he so afraid to sleep? Randy tells him because he's there, adding, whenever he closes his eyes, he's there. Keffler
is very, very romantic.
Keffler asks, who, as Randy responds with Freddy. Keffler asks, who is Freddy? And Randy tells him, you don't want to know. Trust me. Keffler tells him that he does want to know. In fact, he would like to meet this Freddy outside of Randy's imagination.
I want you to know.
Happy for you.
You burned alive.
Randy questions him if he thinks making up nightmares, adding, get real. Keffler responds with, I will if you will. Thinking that Keffler doesn't believe him, Randy gets up and walks out of the room while his mother chases him, pleading for him to work with Keffler. Keffler sits in silence as he walks away. Later that night, Keffler is asleep in his bed as Randy enters the room. Keffler asks Randy what's wrong as he approaches the bed, telling him he's wrong about him and Freddy. Randy walks over to the nightstand and takes out a pistol. And when I say a pistol, it's like a freaking...
It looked like a leftover from a Death Wish
sequel.
A later Death Wish sequel.
We're talking a pistol with a mounted scope on top, which they didn't even use the red dot on it. Like,
no.
He points it and nothing happens.
But wherever the red dot goes,
ya bang. So he pulls out a pistol and he tells him that he's wrong. In fact, tells him that he's wrong. He's dead wrong and he doesn't care about him. He just wants to sell his books. Keffler tells him that it's not true, but Randy calls him a liar as he raises the pistol and fires, waking up Keffler to reveal that was a dream.
Wait a second.
I know.
Ooh.
Crazy. We suddenly hear Randy yelling, "Freddy, no!" as we cut to Randy and Freddy in his domain, who's throwing darts at Randy in front of a giant dartboard.
Freddy is not in his domain. He's in Randy's bedroom, but it's nightmare.
Like split. Yeah, it's split.
Well, it's just the lighting is different. Yeah. And I have to say that the whole Freddy is like hanging out in your bedroom, throwing darts at you and shit. And then, like, just kind of going, like, "Ah, I'm going to kill you eventually." And he's like, "Ah, ah," and he's like, "Ah," like, kind of awesome, actually.
I love it because it, like, Freddy in this episode especially is, like, a drunken, abusive stepdad with some of his comments and actions.
A little bit.
I would say.
So, David, I try not to usually break the third wall, but you've been moving so much in your camera shot that the focus is having trouble catching you.
I know. I'm sorry.
Ay, ay, ay.
So he's throwing darts at him in front of a giant dartboard. He questions Randy, "Trying to get rid of me, huh? Big mistake, bud." He hurls a dart at Randy, just missing him as he dodges out of the way. Freddy continues telling him, "I'm the only friend you got." As he throws another dart, Randy dives out of the way again, landing on his bed, just as Keffler and Kathy enter the room. Randy begs for Freddy to leave him alone, and Freddy, holding up another dart ready to throw, adds, "You're really getting to be a drag, you know." He goes to throw it as Randy shouts to his mom and Keffler to watch out. He holds on the bed, making sure it's safe before, making a break for the door. The two stop him, trying to reassure him that everything is fine and he's just dreaming. They calm him down and console him with no sight of Freddy at all.
Because everything is going to be all right. I'm very in a musical mood. I took a couple caffeine pills.
I just love that Freddy's literally throwing darts at
him. Oh, yeah. He's having a great time. It's important to spice things up.
So the next morning, a crying Kathy sits on the couch distraught with the events of last night. Keffler approaches her and tries to console her. Kathy tells him she feels helpless and whatever it is killing her son. Keffler tells her she won't lose Randy. He's not going to let that happen. And he adds that he needs her help, stating that whatever is in Randy's head is being given a lot of power by his fear. He adds that maybe at some point this fear was real, asking, who is Freddy? Is it someone they knew? Kathy tells him it's Freddy Krueger, but Randy never saw him, nor did she until the newspapers about the murders, adding, then they caught him and he burned to death, which
and he burned to death. You mean when they set him on fire,
which I didn't think was public knowledge. So how did that get out?
Well, for the record, Dave,
yes,
you got to remember, most of the Freddy Krueger story that the kids in Spring would know is from a goddamn nursery rhyme.
That's true.
It's not like they had to dig into the microfiche to find anything more because before that, it was all just like, you mean like that nursery rhyme? Oh, how did it go? There once was a man from Nantucket.
But yeah, I just that kind of threw me. It was like, well, I thought that wasn't public knowledge, but then yeah, you're right. I guess.
Well,
that
also
would be...
the time is jumping around a lot.
Yeah, we also have to keep that in mind as well. So, Keffler asks if Randy or him or if he or Randy ever saw it, to which she adds no. Keffler asks Kathy what his plan is to create a world where Randy has the power to destroy this phantom. We next see the three of them seated in the living room as Randy faces Keffler directly. Keffler sighs and tells Randy to breathe deeply and slowly, relaxing all his muscles and closing his eyes. Randy fires back, asking the doc what is he thinking, knowing that if he closes his eyes, he sleeps. He sleeps, he dreams, he dreams, he dies.
Yeah, and I want to mention real quick, side note, that guy holding the video camera, you know, the camera guy, that is definitely a real video camera that was not built in a props room. That is a real, that camera is big, even by the standards of that era.
You're not wrong.
That's a huge, that's a big camera. And yeah, and the boom mic on it is comically long.
I forgot about the
boom I just wanted to mention that real quick.
No, that's valid. Very valid. So when he says he dies, Keffler interrupts, telling him that he won't, because he's not going to be dreaming. He's going to be telling him what he will see.
Hey, and you know, the doctor, I mean, at least he's not leaning into just strictly you need a good night's sleep.
There is that. He's going to control the sleep.
Yeah.
Not Randy, not Freddy, just him. He tells Randy to give him a chance to guide his imagination, reiterating that they're in this together. Randy and Keffler shake hands as Randy tells him to go for it. Keffler guides Randy into proper breathing and relaxing his body before telling him to close his eyes once more. He tells him to picture himself in a park. Birds singing, children are playing, and there's a gentle breeze and a pleasing aroma of freshly baked chocolate chip cookies that his mom just pulled out of the oven.
I like when he's walking up to the playground because all I could think was like, all All right. T2. Now let's guide him to a Terminator 2-like nuclear nightmare.
I knew you were going to say that.
It is not impressive that you guessed I would bring up Terminator 2.
Well, because it's the first thing I was thinking. He's like, all right, you see a woman. She's on the other side of the fence watching a woman play with her child. Suddenly, an explosion.
It occurs. And then they flat apart like leaves. You're already dead. Him, you, everybody. This whole place, everything you see is gone. You're the one living in a fucking blind Spider-Man. Because I know what happens. It happens.
And that's why Sarah Connor was not the Dream Doctor.
Not yet.
Not yet, at least. You're correct. So he continues that it's time to go home and get some while they're warm. And that night is coming with a blue glow. He continues that he's home now. It's warm, comforting, and peaceful. We see the vision as Randy turns on the light. But suddenly, the door swings open as a garish red and green light begin to reflect in the doorway as we see Freddy, who comments, who's he kidding?
I was waiting for him to be like, now you reach over and turn on the lamp. You slowly start to undo your pants. Oh,
So Freddy goes, who's he kidding? Randy, still in the trance, begins to scream out Freddy's name as Keffler tries to keep controlling him, telling him, no, there's no Freddy. You're alone. Hearing Keffler's words, Freddy fires back with, alone? Oh, I thought we were in this together. Randy tells him he's not supposed to be here as Freddy begins to approach him, asking, you listening to him? Bad idea, bud. Now, let's see if you're well-trained. He approaches Randy, further adding, when I say jump, drawing back his claw and slashing Randy's chest, he lets out a cry of pain and jumps off the couch as Keffler grabs him, pushing him back onto the couch.
Yeah, and I want, come on, Doc. Explain away the slash.
Here we go.
Go on, Doc.
Yeah, so
where'd the slash come from?
Randy screams out that Freddy is here, but Keffler tries to reassure him no one is there. Randy comments that Freddy cut him, but Keffler tells him, no, he accidentally cut him before pushing the camera.
How did he accidentally cut him? I watched that scene twice because I was like, what is he talking about?
Well, you know, that straight razor he was just holding in his hand.
Oh, you mean his emotional support straight
emotional
razor?
Emotional support straight razor.
Yeah, it's not really a straight razor. It's a Chevette. Which is a razor that you put blades into that looks like a straight razor, but you don't have to hone it or sharpen it.
Oh my God.
It's very convenient, David.
So he tells him that he's the one that cut him. Keffler tells him it was accidentally before pushing the cameraman back, telling him to turn it off. Randy sits on the couch, breathing heavy in fear as Kathy tries to console him. The cameraman watches Keffler walk off and follows him. Keffler sits in his room, biting his fingers, clearly nervous about what he's just seen. Gary, the cameraman, played by Gerard Pendergast, who was in Hollywood Nights in 1980, Time Walker in 82, Bachelor Party in 84, and also, do you remember that show Early Edition where that guy got the newspaper that had all the current events before they happened?
That was a series?
Yeah, in 97. He was also on that.
That sounds like that lasted many seasons.
Two.
Two?
Two, I want to say.
Oh, must have been a writer's strike.
So Gary, the cameraman, enters the room, commenting to the doctor about this kind of thing not being the books, huh? Keffler asks what he means, and Gary adds, the kid, the Freddy Krueger thing. Keffler tells him it's not something he's come across before, but he thinks he can get a handle on it.
So, you know, as they were discussing, like, what are we going to do, and the camera guy, first of all, most unrealistic thing I've ever seen on the show, a camera guy that cares about other people's human lives.
Fair.
That's number one.
Fair.
And I can say that as a many time camera person.
That is true. Yes, you can.
But number two, when they're talking about, like, I've seen a lot of things and, like, we need to stand up, you know, we got to figure out how to take this on. And I realized, you know, I would pay good money to see the Warrens take on Freddy.
Oh my God.
But yeah.
I would too. That would actually be very entertaining.
Oh my, yes.
So Gary approaches Keffler, telling him he means no disrespect. He likes him and appreciates what he's trying to do for Randy, but he doesn't know Freddy Krueger.
No.
Keffler asks Gary if he does know him. Gary states he feels that he does due to all the news story he's covered from the station over the years, and there's been some strange deaths over the years.
I was amazed someone actually noticed all the unusual deaths.
Yeah.
About time, man.
Very fair.
Finally, somebody even noticed.
So Keffler listening asks him if the deaths occurred after Freddy's death. Gary confirms, which causes Keffler to begin giggling as he asks Gary if he really thinks Freddy had something to do with these deaths after his own death.
Yeah. Do you really think Freddy had something to do with this death, homeboy? Come on.
Gary tells him he knows it sounds crazy, but there is something strange going on and that they don't understand. Keffler tells him he intends to find a way to understand it, and in another 30 minutes, he's going to try a session with Randy again. Gary leaves the doctor as Keffler puts his head into his hands. We next see him writing on a pad some notes as a knock is heard at his door. Randy enters the room, and Randy sits on the bed by Keffler, asking him if he's going to die. Keffler tries to reassure him that he won't, adding, "Far from it, you're going to be okay."
Far from it.
Yeah.
You'll be as far from death as possible. You're going to come right out of your mom again.
Keffler goes on telling him Freddy is dead and he can't hurt him. Randy questions the explanation for the cuts on his chest, which causes Keffler to sit in silence with no answer before he states maybe they should start another session right now. Randy questions what for, and the camera begins to zoom in on his face as he states he knows what his problem is. He's got a split personality, as his face begins to switch back and forth between a superimposed image of Freddy's face.
So the Freddy superimposing over his face is straight up cursed.
Oh, yeah.
It was the first two times they did it, it was actually very upsetting.
Yeah.
Extremely upsetting.
So suddenly he completely morphs into Freddy, and it's revealed Freddy in his domain with Keffler, but it's half domain, half the bedroom. I keep saying that.
Because it's not his domain. It's the kid's bedroom, which is where Freddy would rather be, in a child's bedroom.
That is 100% accurate.
Yeah.
Keffler asks what the hell is happening, but Freddy interrupts, telling him, my turn. Leave the kid alone. He's mine, and you won't be needing these anymore. He picks up the doctor's notes and uses his glove to shred them before bursting into a scream as he grabs his head, which begins to spurt pus and make cracking sounds
and
as
goop,
Freddy tells him, you've given me a splitting headache. I think I'll take two aspirin and call you in the morning.
And then as the goo is just pouring down his face, he starts slurping it up.
He starts licking it.
Because that's Freddy, you know. He can't go 5 minutes without licking his own skull goo.
He just starts slurping up that pus and laughs as he continues to rain down.
I mean, wouldn't you? I would be
Suddenly,
laughing.
Suddenly, a knock at the door wakes Keffler up as Kathy enters the room, telling him to come quick and look at Randy. Keffler picks up his notes off the floor that are now taped back together, here's something that I thought of. You know, in the very first episode, how he had the dental glove. How Freddy had the dental glove.
The glove made of teeth?
Yeah, no, the glove that had dental
stitches
on it.
Yes, I remember, yes.
Does Freddy just have a glove for every occasion? Like, he's got one that has the tape dispenser already on it, and then he can just run his claws over it? Because I just want to see him taping this document back together.
Whiteout glove. caulk gun glove. Winter is coming!
So he shredded his documents. He picks them back up. They're all taped back together. In Randy's room, Keffler approaches to see Randy is completely asleep. As Kathy comments, he's sleeping like a baby.
Yeah.
Keffler turns away and stares off, questioning his own dream now. We come back both as Keffler and Kathy are in their robes, standing outside of Randy's room as he continues to sleep soundly. Kathy asks him how Randy's doing, and Keffler comments he's sleeping soundly, but he would prefer someone watch him just in case. Kathy offers to, telling him he should get some sleep, but Keffler tells her he's not tired at all. Kathy still insists, though, and Keffler returns to his room. He lays on his bed looking over his notes, but is interrupted as Kathy enters with a hi. As we begin to hear some sexy saxophone enter that soundtrack.
And that is where we finally have the sleaze we've come to expect.
It has returned.
Thank goodness. I was going to call the police.
Kathy walks over to Keffler on the bed, telling him he's given her son back, and now she wants to give him something in return.
What?
Keffler and Kathy go in for a kiss and begin to embrace each other as we hear Freddy off screen ask, "What's up, Doc?" Kathy and Keffler suddenly turn to see Freddy darkly lit, who comments, "Well, well, what's this? What's the big idea? I thought it was just you and me, babe."
So apparently there's an entire romance going on between Freddy and this woman, this middle-aged mom of the character. So Fred, she's just like, "Oh my God, Fred, it's Freddy. It's not what it looks like."
He walks over. He walks over to Kathy, who tells him she can explain. But Freddy replies, "The romance is over. I'm cutting it off right now."
And Freddy
Boy, how.
is being very straight up and direct about it.
He slashes the blades across Kathy's throat, severing her head from her body, which shoots into the corner of the room and ricochets off the wall.
So but Freddy, nobody yelled, go!
No! So Freddy just took off Kathy's head with one single swipe, and apparently they had a romance and were in it together.
I mean, honestly, still a better romance than Twilight.
Twilight, yeah, 100%. So her head ricochets off the wall. Freddy approaches Keffler, telling him, it's time to rock and roll, as he steps onto the bed face to face with him, which I thought was very sexy, mind you.
All of this has been insanely sexy.
Randy is seen entering the room and calling to Keffler, revealing another nightmare just occurred, so she's not dead.
Yes, yes.
Randy tells him that Freddy is gone. He slept the whole night through and he never showed up, and now he feels great. Keffler asks Randy if he's okay, and Randy confirms, adding he doesn't know how he did it, but Freddy is completely out of his head now. Randy races off to tell his mother, leaving Keffler on the bed, looking very confused and concerned. Gary tries to tell the doctor they need another shot, but Keffler walks past him trying to get out the door, telling him it's real. Freddy is real and he needs to warn people. Gary tries to hold Keffler off, asking what happened to Randy and where's Freddy, but Keffler gets past him and begins to drive like a madman to the TV studio. We cut to the studio where Stan, Randy, and Kathy all sit on the show as Randy tells Stan and his audience of the success of Dr. Keffler's program. We then cut back to a speeding Dr. Keffler blowing through stop signs and avoiding other cars. Back in the studio, Stan adds there is still some skepticism even though they have Randy's interview and the videotapes of the whole process. As he says this, Keffler enters disheveled.
Yes.
Stan begins to accuse Keffler of taking credit of Randy's cure, which causes Keffler to ask, what does he mean? Keffler joins them on stage, stating, of course it was me. Stan adds that there might be one gentleman who might have something to say on that, and they're going to bring him out right now to see what he has to say. Stan then asks the audience for a warm Springwood welcome as he introduces Dr. Freddy Krueger.
Woo! I always knew he would get through that PhD program.
How does he not have a lab coat or anything in this scene? He's just completely Freddy Krueger. No suit. I wanted a Dr. Freddy Krueger look.
Well, it ain't Dr. Seuss.
A white wipe effect goes over the screen as the studio is now dark with only red and green lights in the background as Freddy emerges and tells Keffler he never cured anyone, adding he let the kid go because he wanted Keffler. Freddy raises his glove to Keffler as he shouts, pop goes the weasel.
Because why not?
Why not? Yeah, Keffler screams now as we cut back to reality, revealing a crazy Dr. Keffler has just crashed his car into the Stan Brooks set through the wall. He gets out of the car as Stan confronts him, telling him to get a grip on himself. Keffler fights off Stan with a chair, which he then also uses to knock a gun out of a cop's hand. Keffler picks up the gun, ordering Freddy to show his ugly face and firing the gun off into the air. Another
The way, that's how I would have handled it. If I were just keeping it 100.
Yeah.
If I realized Freddy Krueger was real, I would just wantonly fire a gun going, come on, Krueger! Bang, 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 bang! Come on, Krueger!
What are you waiting for?
Wrong film.
I know.
But so right.
Yeah, so right. Firing the gun off into the air, another cop emerges from the side, telling Keffler to freeze, but Keffler raises the gun, which causes the cop to shoot Keffler, dropping him dead on the set. Later, Gary watches from the wings as Keffler is zipped into a body bag and wheeled away. He picks up his camera and begins to film the squad, taking Keffler out. The A story then ends as a gurney emerges in Freddy's domain. The sheets are thrown back to reveal the man himself, who sits up and asks, is there a doctor in the house? Not anymore. And he laughs.
Well, of course he does.
Yes, he does.
When does he not?
And that is the end of the A story. Henrik, would you like to explain, as we always do, for the B story?
Oh, my goodness. Well, you see, kids, on Freddy's Nightmares, there's an A story and there's a B story, but it's not like you're used to. The A story is one story and the B story is simply another vaguely related story so that they could split it in half in certain markets and have a half an hour show instead of a 1 hour show. So that is basically it. I've explained this like 30 times now, so I don't have the enthusiasm I used to.
Well, I still appreciate it.
Well, great.
As do the listeners.
Yeah.
All right, so the B story begins as we join Gary in his editing bay reviewing footage of Keffler with Randy. He watches as Randy tells Keffler for the first time about Freddy, and then Gary pops in a tape of Keffler's final moments calling out to Freddy on the Stan Brooks Show. A voiceover on the tapes tells us that Gary is looking deeper into Freddy's crimes. He comments about Keffler being level-headed and just wanting to help the kid out, but something went wrong.
Oh, yeah,
he watches the monitors as the footage shows Keffler's body being wheeled away, but suddenly catches sight of a figure in the doorway as Freddy steps out and looks directly into the camera. Gary watches the tape as Freddy asks, "What are you staring at?" A door opens at the editing bay, waking Gary up as the station owner, Ben Ostroff, played by Charles Cyphers of Assault on Precinct 13, Halloween, The Fog, Major League. I mean, every John Carpenter
film. He's pretty much just the hard ass in everything.
Everything. Yeah. Enters telling Gary a mobile unit is waiting for him and there's been another murder in Springwood. You don't say.
What?
Gary chugs coffee telling Ben he's on it, but stops to ask if he's seen his fiance Judy around. Ben states he thought that they came in together, but Gary states they had a fight and she went back to her place last night. Ben tells Gary they're going to have to discuss his relationship if it keeps getting him in the way of his work before telling him to get over there for B-roll and he'll send Judy over for the on-camera interviews.
I wish that this guy had just been like in his gruff voice like, "Hey, don't shit where you eat."
We can only hope.
It would have been nice.
So the two leave the bay together as the camera turns back around. The VCR has magically turned itself on and begins to play as we pan up to a monitor where Freddy is admiring himself in the camera, making kissy faces and stating, "Krueger, oh, you beauty. How do I look? Oh, man of my dreams. Oh, you fashion plate. Oh, that guy in there doesn't think so, but he'll change his mind if it's the last thing he does."
And I mean, that's a fair point.
The camera then zooms out to reveal Freddy on every single monitor laughing before it cuts back to static on all of them. I love that shot. That was so cool. At the scene of the crime, a woman's body is shown face down in a dumpster as multiple cops, detectives, and reporters surround the area, snapping pictures and taking down testimonies. Gary arrives in the news van and meets another cameraman, Ricky, who is played by Bruce Marchino. He was in The Curse 2, The Bite in 89, Days of Our Lives, Columbo in 91, and then basically went, he was found again because he did a shit ton of Christian films after that, like Faith Happens, and then he did a Hallmark film.
He was found again?
I can't remember what the word.
Born
again. Thank you.
What?
What?
We watched Nefarious last week. Yeah. You should know this stuff by now.
Block that shit out of my mind.
That wasn't a bad film.
It wasn't a great film.
How many horror movies do we go into the theaters to see that aren't a great film?
I digress.
All right. Dave just hates you if you're Christian.
He also did a movie called Banking on Christmas. It's a Hallmark film also.
Ooh.
So he's shown shooting footage. Gary asked him if he's been there shooting long. He says about 15 minutes and asks then if he's seen any suspicious characters around, which causes Ricky to ask, "Suspicious like who?" And Gary responds with, "You'd know if you saw him." Ricky goes off to shoot more footage and Gary begins to fire off a test signal for Ben back in the studio. Ben tells him,
"This is impossible, by the way, the way he's broadcasting a signal without a truck." Yeah. You literally need a truck with antennas and satellite dishes.
He's got full clear audio, full clear footage, all based off of that one.
It was beautiful.
So he tells Ben, Ben tells him the signal's fine, but he's going to have to go forward doing the story alone as there's still no sign of Judy. Gary states that she never showed up without calling, but Ben states she probably had a flat tire or something. Gary begins to shoot footage as the coroner arrives for the body. They approach the dumpster as Gary continues shooting and pull the body onto the gurney. Detective Jackson, played by George C. Sims, who was in Falcon Crest, Murphy Brown, L.A. Law, Columbo, approaches the body, looking it over, and looks back at Gary with concern. He begins to walk towards him as Gary drops the camera, telling him he's blocking the shot. He tells Gary they need to talk, but Gary argues he's in the middle of a story. But Jackson interrupts, telling him they've identified the victim.
And before we identify the victim, David.
Yeah.
Here, I'm going to turn your headphones up so you can tell when I'm interrupting you. but before we reveal the victim, I just want to point out, there was no desire to treat this crime scene with respect and dignity.
None.
Like literally, there's just a crowd around them pulling a corpse out of a dumpster.
Yeah.
And they're all just like, one guy's got a camera right there. And everybody's going, ooh, ah.
They're all crowded around it, taking the testimonies. Like, there's no breathing room anywhere.
Who's this corpse? Hey, who's this corpse? I spit on it. You know?
So he tells them they've identified the body and it is Judy. So Gary, excuse me, I lost my place. In disbelief and shock, Gary tries to run up and sees, but Jackson blocks him, telling him he doesn't want to see her like this, and she wouldn't want him to either. Cameras begin to swarm Gary, who freaks out and shoves them away, telling them to get out of his face. Detective Jackson orders them to kill their fees before he does it for them. Ricky tries to explain he's just covering the story and it's nothing personal, but Gary fires back with, "Tell that to Judy." The rest of the crew go back to the scene as Gary sneaks over to Ricky's case and steals his tape of B-roll from the scene before leaving. Back in the editing bay, Gary watches the tape, trying to find a glimpse of Freddy on it. He watches the footage of him being told about Judy before going to another B-roll section where, inside of a building, he catches Freddy peeking out of the tape, pauses it.
Which is so good.
Yes. Pauses it and looks at Freddy, telling him he knew he was alive and that it was no nightmare. And, like, when we say he pauses it, Freddy is just, like, posing behind these trash cans.
Well, I mean, he's not, like, posing, but he's just, like, there.
Yeah. But he's got, like, his arms stretched out.
Yeah, I would have thought that, you know, Freddy would at least be blurry like Bigfoot.
I just, I will say, like, but before we get to the end of the episode, I love the use of, like, the video in this story. Like, the way that Freddy's on camera and everything. Oh, just, I love it.
Yeah, I like it. It's pretty cool.
So we next see Ben enter the studio to check on Gary. Gary tells him he's got the biggest story of his career and Ben's. He begins to tell him, Ben, that Judy, Dr. Keffler, and half the murders in Springwood, he can trace back to the same guy, and he won't believe who it is. Ben tells him to spill it, and Gary tells him, Freddy Krueger, to which Ben tells him, "You're right, I don't believe you."
You're right!
Ben goes to walk away, but Gary grabs him and tries to show him the evidence on tape, which of course is no longer there now. Ben walks out of the editing bay, telling Gary he's putting him on a leave of absence. Gary tries to argue he's doing it because he thinks he's crazy, but Ben tells him, with the loss of his fiance, he needs to go home, get some rest, and stop thinking about Freddy Krueger.
Yeah, get some rest. You know what you need? A good night's sleep.
I just love that he literally says, go home, get some rest, and stop thinking about Freddy Krueger. I want to add that whenever I have friends that need to relax.
Yeah, now. That's going to be my thing now. Go home, relax, get some sleep, stop worrying about Freddy Krueger. You know, my friends could say that to me every night and they'd be right.
That's fair. That's totally fair.
They wouldn't be wrong.
We then see Gary at Jennings' home, sitting with Randy, asking him about the Freddy experience. Randy tells
him... his band? The Freddy experience?
That deaf, dumb, blind kid sure plays mean pinball. Dun, 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 dun.
Man, I want that album. We already got Freddy's Greatest Hits. Now we need the Freddy experience.
Yeah, the Freddy experience, baby. I'm telling you, it's good stuff.
Randy tells him all he had to do was sleep, and Freddy was there. But Gary asks if it's still reoccurring. Randy confirms he has no more nightmares since Dr. Keffler, which causes Gary to ask why he thinks Keffler snapped. Randy tries to avoid the subject before Gary coaxes him to say his thoughts. Randy states he thinks Freddy killed Dr. Keffler. Gary asks Randy if he thinks Freddy exists in the real world, and Randy says that he does, and he was there with them and saw what happened to Keffler. Gary tells Randy he thinks Freddy is real, and he needs his help to solve the problem. Randy turns down Gary's request, but Gary asks him what will he do if Freddy comes back for him. Randy reluctantly agrees and asks Gary what he wants, and Gary hands him a paper telling him to meet him at this address later tonight before he leaves. Later, we see Gary in the news van outside of the area where Judy's body was discovered. Gary gets out of the car and approaches the entryway where he caught the footage of Freddy. Inside the building, Gary stumbles around the empty, vacant interior, but comes across a wino who tells him to get out. Suddenly, Freddy emerges right in front of the two, causing Gary to gasp, and Freddy wastes no time walking over to the wino and slashing his face and throat, killing him instantly.
I mean, why wouldn't he, right?
Gary lets out a scream of terror and runs from Freddy, only to run right into him. Freddy tells him, "Neat how I can do this, ain't it?"
I mean, he's not wrong. It's pretty neat.
Now, you'll be the one to blame for a change. He laughs as he walks towards Gary, but suddenly a knock wakes him up, revealing Gary fell asleep in the news van waiting for Randy. Gary exits the van, telling Randy that Judy was killed over there, and that's where they're going to start looking. The two enter the building, which looks exactly like it did in Gary's dream, minus the wino.
Oh, of course.
The two walk around cautiously, but find nothing. Gary tells Randy they're looking for evidence that Freddy was or is still here. Gary and Randy make their way over to a locker that Gary opens to reveal the dead/wino inside, who falls to the ground.
And I want to say,
yeah,
this show, you know, this episode's taking kind of an interesting direction. I have to say, I would tune in every week to see the cameraman and the high schooler solve a new mystery.
No, I would too.
I would do that.
So he falls to the ground. Gary tells Randy to call the police, and Randy asks how he knew that body was in there. Gary tells Randy, fast! and Randy runs off as Gary explores the building more. He makes his way over to a greenly lit corner, finding writing on the floor in blood that says, "You are here, and so am I," as Freddy emerges from the green lights, telling Gary, "Party!"
I just want to start using the term greenly.
Greenly?
Greenly lit.
Greenly lit.
Greenly lit.
Shut up.
It's okay. One of us has an education, but you never guess who.
Gary falls back to the ground. We cut to Randy with Detective Jackson as they look over the dead wino. Randy comments about how he asked Gary about the location of the body, to which Detective Jackson asked what they were doing there. Randy tells him that Gary was going to prove Freddy was alive, and Jackson tells him, tells his officer to put an APB out for Gary immediately. We cut back to Gary walking around the building and his camera calling to Freddy to show himself, asking, why is he afraid? Why are you hiding? He sets the camera down and does a signal test to Ben and Ricky back in the editing bay. Ben asks what the hell he's doing, and Gary tells him he's going to battle with Freddy and to roll all the backup tapes that they have. Ben tells Ricky to get a tracer signal on his camera, and Gary continues that Freddy is here and he can feel him inside his head, but it's no nightmare. Suddenly, Freddy appears, commenting, "No nightmare, says who?" From Gary's camera POV, we see him approach Freddy, stating, "He's here." Freddy fires back with, "Well, who'd you expect? The Avon lady?" Gary encourages Freddy to keep talking, and Freddy tells him to move the camera to his left so Gary can get his good side. We cut back to Ben and Ricky in the bay, watching Gary's footage, revealing that there is no Freddy in front of the camera.
But I gotta
say,
narcissist Freddy? Kind of the best Freddy. It's the Freddy. Get my good side.
I love Freddy in this episode, but we'll get to that. So Ben comments Gary is off the deep end. Freddy begins to chase after Gary, who comments on his murder of Judy, but Freddy tells him that that was actually Gary's sloppy work, and he really did a number on her, champ. Gary states that it's a lie, and Freddy comments with, "Maybe, maybe not." Detective Jackson reaches out to Ben to find Gary's location, and Ben tells him where he's broadcasting from. Ben asks Jackson why he wants Gary, to which he reveals that Judy's autopsy revealed traces of Gary's clothing all over her, confirming that Gary killed Judy.
I mean, it does. That's a little bit of a stretch. He's his, yeah. He's her girl, or she's his girlfriend.
Significant
so,
other, yeah,
but
yeah.
Still, well,
yeah.
But I mean, that's more damning than anything.
Yeah. Gary makes his way outside, still shooting Freddy as he keeps approaching him, asking him about the death of the wino. Gary asks him why he used him and responds with, "Oh, gee, I don't know. Maybe because it's fun." Gary keeps taking steps back, not watching his surroundings. Ben and Ricky watch from the bay as his footage still shows no Freddy on it. Gary once again accuses Freddy of the murders, but Freddy stops and states, "Yeah, but I'm dead. What's your excuse?" Before taking his claw back and swiping at Gary, sending him through a railing and off the building ledge to the ground.
Oh, and I want to mention, I take that back. Narcissist Freddy isn't the best Freddy. Hmm. It's gaslighting Freddy
gaslighting
is the best Freddy.
Freddy.
And because that's how he wraps it up, is with being gaslighting. Lighting Freddy to a T.
Gary dies on impact as Detective Jackson approaches the body in the camera. He turns off the camera, killing the signal at the studio. The episode ends as we cut back to Freddy in his domain, holding a camera up to his face and filming, stating, "That's the way it is. I always wanted to be on TV. Maybe now they'll give me my own show. Oh, I think I love you." Licking his lips and making goofy faces into the camera.
I want to see Freddy react to the pool of TMZ camera people swarming. Freddy! Did you kill all those children?
I'm just trying to shop at Costco.
Freddy, Mr. Krueger, come here, Mr. Krueger.
Ah.
What are you gonna do? Kill us in our dreams? None of us sleep. Not with what we do for a living.
No shit, they don't.
But that is
Dream Come True,
yes, it
season
is.
2, episode 1. And boy, howdy, what an episode.
Yeah, it's got a lot going on, but it's also a Freddy-centric episode.
Yeah.
And I enjoyed it.
I greatly enjoyed it. If this is what we can expect more from season 2, I'm all in. I'm all in regardless,
yeah,
but I'm all in.
It didn't have as much zaniness as I have become accustomed to and look forward to. So like I would give it like a solid B.
I was thinking a B plus.
Oh.
I really enjoyed this. My takeaway from this first episode is that I love how menacing Freddy was in it, but also just really funny at the same time.
Yeah, no, he was funny. And his makeup was totally part 5 and 6 style this time around.
But like him throwing the darts and him making the comments.
Yeah.
Just like I said, abusive drunk stepfather Freddy is what this episode was.
It's the best. So, but anyway. Oh, no.
Here he comes.
Hey, B. bitch.
Hey, Freddy.
How you doing?
We're doing good.
So, I heard that they're going to take my show off of that streaming service that they named after you. You know, Tubby.
Tubby. Oh, my God. Yes. Yeah, Freddy, they're taking down your show.
Shut up. I'm going to tell you right now. If they take my show off of Tubi, you know it's owned by Fox.
Yeah.
Yeah, Rupert Murdoch is going to have a bigger nightmare than having to pay Dominion Voting System $700 million he takes Freddy's nightmares off of Tubi.
That is fair. That's very fair.
But you know what isn't fair?
What's not fair?
Life, and you're proof of it.
Bye, Freddy.
That's really rude, Freddy. Thank you.
No, it was that was completely fair, Freddy. I think that was completely fair.
So that is the episode. But for next week, we are going to be heading back to Springwood for season two, episode two, Heartbreak Hotel.
Heartbreak
Hotel. Directed by William Malone. He was the director on Dark Justice and House on Haunted Hill remake.
Yeah, I was going to say, Bill Malone ended up doing a lot of interesting stuff in the 90s. Yeah,
Written by Jonathan Glassner, who wrote Mikey.
I love Mikey.
Yes. So that is what we have to look forward to. So that is what is going to be happening next week in Springwood.
Well, on that note, I guess it's time for us to get out of here. But I do want to remind you, if you like what we're doing here, you can go to freddysnightmares.com, click on Patreon, sign up, and watch the video podcast and support us directly. You can also go to freddysnightmares.com and buy any merchandise you want. And if you want a way to help us out that doesn't cost you a penny, give us a review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. Just give us a 5-star rating. It really helps new people discover the show. But now we're going to get out of here. Thank you so much for listening. We'll see you next week right here in Springwood.
Don't fall asleep.
Quiet, David.